Why does it matter? He's dead. Are you dead too? Did you kill Peter Morris? Walt asked. Is it possible for a ghost to kill a living person? I hadn't considered that possibility, the man muttered, more to himself than Walt. I'm talking about when you were alive, of course, Walt said impatiently. Where is your body? I suppose I could ask the same of you. Where is your body? Did you kill Peter Morris? Walt sighed impatiently. This is my house. You're the one who needs to answer the questions. If you're dead, how can you own this house? How is that even possible? I understood Danielle owns this house. You just stay away from Danielle and answer my questions. The man laughed. Now that is definitely something I will not do. Before Walt could respond, the man vanished. 9. When Ian arrived at the police station on Friday morning, they wouldn't take him in to see Lily. The residents of Marlowe House were still being interviewed. No one would tell Ian what had happened. He just knew Lily was unharmed. He had been waiting for about 30 minutes in the front lobby when Chief MacDonald arrived. MacDonald was preoccupied and wouldn't answer any of Ian's questions, but he asked Ian to wait, telling him someone would be out in a few moments to get him. 20 minutes later, Joe Morelli stepped out from the inner offices. Ian stood up.
Can I see Lily now?
In a minute, but first would you come with me? Joe asked. After leading Ian into his office, Joe closed the door, gestured for Ian to sit down, and said, I thought we could do this in here since all the rooms are full. Do what? Ian asked as he sat down. Joe took a seat behind his desk and grabbed a pen and pad of paper. I need to ask you a few questions. Joe couldn't help but remember how well he and Ian had hit it off when Joe had briefly dated Danielle some 8 months earlier. The two men were about the same age, and the four of them, Ian and Lily and Danielle and Joe, had enjoyed each other's company. There had been laughter and a promise of a bright future, a romance with Danielle, and a friendship with Ian and Lily, until everything changed. While Joe still considered Ian a friend, any bromance had cooled sufficiently. What's going on, Joe? I get up this morning, see cops parked all over the street, crime tape in front of Marlowe House, and they tell me everyone has been brought down here. What happened? Ian, where did you sleep last night? My house. Why? You didn't stay at Marlowe House. No. What time did you get up this morning? Joe asked. It was almost 8. Why? What time did you go to bed last night? Ian let out a deep sigh and leaned back in the chair before answering. It was after midnight. What's going on? Did you go outside at all last night? Did you ever look out the window? Look across the street to Marlowe House? Ian shook his head. No, I was pretty exhausted. I'd been working all day. Hit the bed and that was pretty much it. I would probably have slept longer, but Sadie woke me up. She had to go out. That's when I looked across the street and saw all the cop cars. Joe tossed the pen onto his desk and leaned back in the chair. His gaze met Ian's. Peter Morris was murdered last night.
Damn! Are you serious? That's going to change everything.
Change what? Joe frowned. I've been working on an exposé on Morris and earthbound spirits. This will change the direction of my piece. What happened? Any idea who did it? I guess you'll have to ask Lily and Danielle about that. Ian frowned. What are you talking about? That's the reason for the crime tape. Early this morning, Peter Morris was found murdered at Marlowe House. What do you mean, found at Marlowe House? In the parlor, to be exact. With his throat slashed.
Holy crap. Ian stood up and briefly lifted his Cubs baseball cap from his head before putting it back on. He paced in front of the desk for a moment and then paused and looked at Joe.
Have you arrested anyone?
Not yet.
Do you know who did it? Ian asked.
It's an ongoing investigation. Like I said, we haven't arrested anyone yet.
I can't believe this. He was murdered at Marlowe House? What happened?
Ian sat back down.
As far as we know, his body was found in the parlor of Marlowe House between 3 and 4 this morning. His throat had been slashed. Initially, Heather found Chris standing over the body with blood on his hands. Chris claimed he'd just found Morris and was checking his vitals. We do know Morris had come to Marlowe House at midnight to see Chris. He threatened to reveal Chris's real name if he didn't make a large donation. That's pretty much all that we have right now. Oh, and we found the murder weapon.
No way Chris killed him, Ian insisted.
Why do you say that? Joe asked.
Why would he? Ian scoffed. And even if he wanted to, Chris has enough money to make Morris disappear without anyone suspecting him. Not to mention, he has absolutely no motive.
He was being blackmailed. That's a motive.
Blackmailed for what?
I told you he threatened to reveal Chris's real last name.
Come on, Joe, you aren't serious. If Chris was so desperate to keep his identity a secret, which I don't believe he is, then he certainly isn't going to commit a sensational crime just a few steps from the room he's staying in. That makes absolutely no sense.
I'm not saying it was premeditated, but a crime of passion, maybe.
He seems intent on staying close to Danielle. Found a way to keep renting a room from her even though she doesn't operate a boarding house. Maybe he panicked when Morris made his demand. He grabbed the first thing he could find, his own knife, and in a fit of rage, slit Morris's throat. He waited for everyone to go to bed before moving the body. But Heather surprised him, and when she screamed, it got the entire house up.
Ian stared at Joe.
Are you saying the murder weapon belonged to Chris?
Joe nodded. It was his fishing knife.
You're serious, aren't you? Ian said dully. You actually believe Chris murdered Morris?
Yes, I do, Joe said solemnly.
Ian stood up abruptly, and just as he did, the office door opened. Standing at the doorway was Chief McDonald.
They told me you were in here with Joe. McDonald greeted them.
He then looked at Joe and asked,
Are you done with him? Lily is ready to leave, and I told her Ian was here for her.
Yes, Joe said with a nod.
Without another word, Ian rushed from the room.
Is Danielle still here? Joe asked.
Yes, I haven't had a chance to talk to her yet. I asked her to wait, but I have to run to my office and make a phone call first.
Would you mind if I talk to her?
That's fine. When you're done, send her to my office. Give me at least 10 minutes.
Joe was sitting at his desk when Danielle came into his office.
They said you wanted to talk to me for a minute? Danielle asked wearily.
You look exhausted.
Joe stood up and motioned to the empty chair.
Would you like me to get you a cup of coffee?
Danielle shook her head and flopped down in the empty chair. No thanks. I think I've already downed about 3, maybe 4 cups, which I'm going to regret. But if you happen to have any bacon and eggs lying around, I'll take it. I'm starved. Joe smiled.
Sorry, I don't. But I'll be happy to take you out to breakfast after you finish talking to the chief.
Danielle flashed him a kind smile. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate the offer. But Chris is waiting for me. We drove over in my car. Danielle watched as Joe sat back down behind his desk. He'd had a recent haircut, she thought. The style he normally wore reminded her a bit of an old-fashioned boy's haircut,
one that allowed his soft, dark curls to remain. While this new cut was longer than a buzz cut, it was far shorter than Danielle had ever seen him wear his hair, and the curls were gone.
Are you okay, Danielle?
Well, aside from the fact I got about an hour of sleep last night, if that, and someone was murdered in my house, I guess I'm terrific.
It really does seem Marlowe House wasn't meant to be an inn.
Danielle frowned. Why do you say that?
Looking back, most of the bad things that have happened to you since you arrived never would have happened if you hadn't pursued the bed and breakfast. Opening your house to strangers just invites danger.
Now you're making up rhymes?
Danielle smirked. This is serious, Danielle. You know what I mean.
She let out a weary sigh. Unfortunately, yes, I do. But don't start that again. Please, not right now. I'm too flipping exhausted to argue with you.
I don't want to argue with you, Joe insisted.
Sure sounded that way. And it's always the same argument.
I just worry about you, Danielle. I won't apologize for that. You have no idea how I felt when I heard Morris had been brutally murdered under your roof. What would have happened had you walked into the parlor at the wrong time? It might have been you lying in the morgue right now.
I appreciate your concern, Joe, and trust me, that thought has crossed my mind, too.
How about I take you away from all this ugliness, at least for a couple hours? Let me take you out to dinner tonight. You need a break.
Thanks, Joe, but honestly, all I want to do is go home and crawl back into bed and sleep. Which will not be so easy, considering all that dang caffeine I consumed this morning.
Then let me take you out tomorrow night.
Danielle studied Joe for a moment before responding. Tomorrow is Valentine's Day.
Do you have a date already?
No, but, well, restaurants are always swamped on Valentine's Day.
I'm sure I can get us in somewhere.
Thanks for the invitation, Joe, but I just don't think it would be such a terrific idea.
Ah, come on, Danielle. We're still friends, aren't we?
I'm sure we are.
Then what will dinner with a friend hurt?
On Valentine's Day? Danielle shook her head. I don't think so. I don't want to give you the wrong impression. We are friends, Joe, but just friends. Nothing else. Joe leaned back in his chair and studied Danielle.
It's Chris, isn't it?
Chris has nothing to do with this.
I think he's dangerous, Danielle. I believe he murdered Morris.
Don't be ridiculous. There is no way Chris would have killed him. He had no motive. Joe then proceeded to share his theory with Danielle, the same theory he had given Ian. When he was done, Danielle silently stood up.
Where are you going? Joe asked.
I imagine the chief is off the phone by now. Danielle turned toward the door, but then paused and turned briefly back to Joe. You're wrong about Chris. Please don't do this again. Without waiting for a response, Danielle left the office. 10. I swear, Joe drives me insane, Danielle told McDonald when she entered his office a few minutes later. She shut the door behind her. Without waiting for an invitation, she sat down across from him. They were alone.
Let me guess. Joe told you his theory of who murdered Peter Morris, McDonald asked.
You mean how Chris killed Morris in a fit of rage and then left him in the parlor for a couple hours, waiting for everyone to fall asleep so he could sneak back later and dispose of the body?
It's not a bad theory, since Morris did come to see Chris.
Danielle slumped down in the chair. I suppose from Joe's limited perspective, it is a reasonable theory.
Of course.
MacDonald absently tapped his fingertips on the desktop.
I'd have to ask myself, wouldn't Chris worry about Peter Morris's ghost sticking around and telling you or Walt what he'd done?
Well, actually, Morris's ghost did stick around. The chief leaned forward.
You saw Morris's ghost?
Danielle shook her head. No, Walt did.
Did he say who killed him?
No, but it's always possible he's talked to Walt since we've been here. Although the thought of Morris's spirit lingering around Marlowe House rather freaks me out.
I can't say I blame you. You already went through that with Stoddard.
Danielle leaned toward the desk. I've a question for you, one I couldn't ask Brian.
What's that?
Was there a second body? Did your people find another man's body? He frowned.
A second body? Why would you ask that?
Because last night, technically early this morning, Walt saw two spirits. One was Peter Morris, and the other was a younger man Walt didn't recognize. I have to wonder if two ghosts suddenly appear and we find the body of one. Shouldn't there be another body out there?
If there's a second body, we haven't found it. Tell me what you know, what you couldn't tell Brian.
I was having this lovely dream hop in Hawaii, she said with a sigh. At least, I think it was Hawaii. MacDonald frowned.
Dream hop?
Some spirits have the ability to visit people in their dreams, even people unlike me who can't normally see spirits. MacDonald smiled.
I sometimes dream about my grandmother. Those dreams always feel a bit different.
I assume it's the grandmother I met at the cemetery, she asked.
Yes.
Wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't a regular dream. I call it a dream hop. Walt does it with Lily sometimes. It gives them a chance to have a real visit where she can see and hear him. And sometimes, well, sometimes he does it with me.
Why would Walt have to dream hop with you?
Danielle smiled softly. Because in a dream, you make your own reality. We can set sail on the sea, kick back on a sandy beach, or go skydiving.
Seriously?
Danielle grinned. Yep. Last night, I was lounging on a tropical beach when I started to get cold. Unfortunately, in a dream, our body is still vulnerable to the real world. My blankets had fallen to the floor, and I was freezing, instead of waking up. Walt offered to leave the dream world and return to my room and cover me up. When he got there, he saw the two spirits.
They were together?
No. He saw the first one in my bedroom. It was the younger man. Walt asked him a couple questions, but he just disappeared. So Walt headed downstairs, looking for him, and that's when he saw Peter Morris's spirit running down the hall. Morris said something about having to get out of there and then vanished.
So what did Walt do? Did he find the body?
Danielle shook her head. No, he decided to wake up Chris. I guess he thought Chris could help him figure it out without waking me up. Chris was asleep when Walt went into his bedroom. That's how I know Chris was telling the truth about finding Morris later, after he thought Morris had left.
Was Walt with Chris when he found the body?
No. Chris went to investigate the parlor because that's the direction Walt had seen Morris coming from. Walt went to wake me up. I had just woken up when I heard Heather scream. And you know the rest.
In all fairness to Joe, what you told me really doesn't discredit Joe's theory. If Walt was with you in a dream, it was possible Chris killed Morris in a fit of rage, not thinking out the possible consequences of his actions.
And then just left his body in the parlor and went to bed? I don't know about you, but if I just killed someone in a fit of rage, I couldn't go to bed and fall asleep. And according to Walt, Chris was sound asleep when he woke him up. I'm not saying I agree with the theory, just that it's not without merit. The chief reached over and snatched a manila folder from the corner of his desk. Danielle watched McDonald open the folder. Maybe Walt has found out something since we left him. I wanted to ask you a few questions about one of your guests.
Which one?
David Hilton.
David? What about him?
We did a brief background check on the couple staying for the weekend to see if anything came up.
You mean a connection to Earthbound Spirits or Morris? She asked.
I remember reading an article a while back about how Earthbound Spirits' headquarters was bequeathed to the organization by Helen Hilton, along with her entire estate, which was a considerable fortune. It caused quite a stir at the time. Family sued. Lost.
Hilton? As in the hotel chain?
No relationship to the hotel chain, but there is a connection to David Hilton. He's Helen Hilton's youngest grandson.
No kidding. Does this mean he was involved with a lawsuit against Earthbound Spirits?
He and his siblings.
He didn't mention anything last night about his connection to Morris, Danielle murmured.
No, he didn't.
From the folder, McDonald removed a printout of an online news article regarding the lawsuit. He handed it to Danielle. After she read the article, she tossed it back on his desk. While David had a reason to hate the man, I can't imagine he was involved in his murder. How would he have known Morris was going to be at the house? Why would he have killed Morris under the same roof he was staying? That's even more implausible than Joe's theory.
Maybe it wasn't premeditated. Maybe David came downstairs to get a drink of water, like Heather did later that evening. He saw Morris waiting in the entry after Heather had gone up to bed and Chris was in the kitchen looking for you. For whatever reason, he confronted Morris, wanted to tell him what he thought of him. The two men went into the parlor and things escalated, got out of control, and David killed him.
And how did David conveniently get a hold of Chris's fishing knife? Chris's tackle box was on the back porch. I assume whoever used it to kill Morris, assuming it is the same knife, stole it earlier and intended to use it to frame Chris, Danielle said.
I suppose that is possible, Danielle, McDonald conceded. But according to Chris, his knife had been missing for a few days. Perhaps it wasn't stolen. Maybe he misplaced it, set it in the parlor and forgot it. Or maybe whoever borrowed it earlier did the same thing. And when David was confronted with Morris in the parlor, he was just so angry and happened to find the knife.
And managed to slit Morris's throat? Just tell me, Chief. Where's the blood evidence? Your people have gone through the house. Did you find any bloody clothes that might have belonged to David? Now that I think about it, that would go for Chris, too. I can't imagine it's possible to cut someone's throat without getting blood on them. While Chris had some on his hands when we found him with Morris, I'm pretty sure he didn't have any on him when Walt woke him up. I can't imagine going to bed in bloody clothes. And if he did, that blood would be transferred to the sheets.
It doesn't mean Hilton wasn't able to dispose of his clothes before the body was found several hours later. He could have buried them on the beach. They could have gone out with the tide. There's a number of possibilities.
I suppose we'll have to wait then to see if any clothes wash up on shore.
So who do you think did it? He asked.
I honestly have no idea. Danielle shook her head. But if you would just let me go home, maybe we'll get the answers we need. When can I go home, by the way?
When I left your house, they had a couple more hours, maybe more. I'll call you as soon as you can go back.
The chief's phone began to ring.
He picked it up and looked to see who was calling. He raised his hand briefly to Danielle, signaling he was about to take the call. A few minutes later, when the call ended, he smiled up to Danielle.
If Walt doesn't have any new information for us, maybe we won't have to wait for any bloody clothes to wash up, he told her.
What do you mean?
Apparently, they found a bloody fingerprint on the wrought iron fencing along the front of Marlowe House, down by the street.
Do they know who it belongs to? Danielle asked.
My guess? The killer.
11. David and Arlene turned down Lily and Ian's invitation to join them for breakfast. None of them were allowed to return to Marlowe House. According to Police Chief McDonald, they wouldn't be able to do that until after 3 that afternoon. By the time David and Arlene left the police station, Lily and Ian were already gone, but Danielle and Chris were still inside, talking to officers. Arlene silently stared out the side window of the Honda Accord as David steered the vehicle down the road, looking for somewhere to stop for breakfast. With both hands firmly on the steering wheel, David glanced briefly at Arlene and asked,
"I thought you'd look happier."
Still gazing out the side window, she said,
"Maybe we should go home now."
"Just because Morris is dead, it doesn't mean this is over for us. Maybe this isn't what we planned, but I don't see the point of leaving now."
A few minutes later, David pulled into a restaurant parking lot. After he turned off the engine, they both got out of the vehicle, neither of them saying a word. They were just about to step onto the walkway leading to the front door of the restaurant when they heard someone call out,
"Arlene?"
They both paused and looked in the direction of the voice. Arlene reached out and touched David's wrist.
"Go on in and get us a table."
"Who's that?"
David watched the man walk toward them.
"Just someone I know."
Arlene gave David a gentle nudge, urging him to continue to the restaurant. Without another word, David turned and hurried up the walkway and entered the building.
"I wondered if that was you?"
The man greeted her when he reached Arlene, giving her a quick hug.
"Adam! Adam Nichols! It's been a long time," Arlene said when the hug ended.
They stood together on the sidewalk, their gazes locked, and his hands lightly holding her fingertips.
"You look amazing." "Of course you always did,"
Adam told her. He gave her fingers a quick squeeze and then released his hold. She took a step back, her eyes still on his.
"You look pretty good yourself. I'm really sorry about Isabella."
"You heard?" Adam asked.
"You know I would, considering everything. Anyway, it was in all the papers."
"You probably also heard Isabella and I hadn't been together for a long time. Almost a year when she died."
Arlene readjusted the strap of her handbag, which hung over her right shoulder.
"Well, you know what I always said. Earthbound spirits has a way of destroying relationships."
"I don't know. I always thought they were responsible for..."
Adam didn't finish the sentence.
"For us?" Arlene asked in a whisper.
Adam shrugged in reply.
"You could have called me after, well, after you and Isabella broke it off."
Slipping her handbag strap off her shoulder, she clutched it in her hands, nervously fidgeting with the leather loop.
"I considered it, but then I didn't think you would have been thrilled to hear from me."
Glancing down at her purse, Arlene sighed. Looking back up into Adam's face, she said,
"Yeah, you're probably right. Things were always a little complicated for us."
"So,"
Adam nodded toward the restaurant door.
"Your boyfriend? Husband?"
"Not married," Arlene explained. "He's a friend. We're spending the weekend in Frederickport."
Adam shoved his hands into his coat pockets and glanced from Arlene to the restaurant door, and then back to Arlene. Ah, a romantic Valentine's weekend. Arlene shrugged.
So, what about you? Any woman finally get you to settle down?
No, still single. I'm not the settle-down type.
Arlene looked over to the restaurant. I guess I should go. I imagine David's got us a table by now.
Yeah, and he's probably wondering what's keeping you so long.
Arlene flashed Adam a weak smile. It really was good seeing you again.
You too. Have a nice weekend.
Adam leaned over and brushed a kiss over her cheek. Flashing him a final smile, she said, "Take care of yourself." When Arlene turned from Adam and started toward the restaurant, he called out,
"Arlene, wait."
She paused a moment and looked at him.
"I was sorry to hear about your brother," he called out.
"I'd understand if you really weren't," she told him. Adam watched as Arlene turned from him and made her way into the restaurant. When the door closed, Adam mumbled to himself,
"Now, where are you having breakfast?"
"Not here." Shaking his head, Adam turned back toward the parking lot. When Adam parked in front of Pier Cafe 10 minutes later, he spied Danielle and Chris walking toward the restaurant. Hastily getting from his car, he slammed the door shut and sprinted to catch up with them while calling out,
"Chris? Danielle?"
They both came to a stop and turned to face Adam. Slightly out of breath when he reached them, he said,
"I tried calling you about an hour ago. I wanted to let you know I spoke to Escrow this morning." "Is everything okay?" Chris asked. "Looks like Escrow is closing early. By this afternoon, you'll be a Frederickport homeowner."
Before Chris could respond, Adam turned his attention to Danielle, looking her up and down with a curious expression.
"When did you take up jogging?"
"Jogging?" Danielle frowned.
"Well, I just figured..."
Adam looked her up and down again, taking in her disheveled appearance.
"Have you looked in a mirror this morning?"
Wrinkling her nose, Danielle backhanded Adam's arm. He only laughed at her tepid assault. He then looked back to Chris, noting that he didn't look much better.
"Ah, now I get it," Adam said with a dry chuckle. "Active morning in bed for you two. Grabbing some food before round two?"
Danielle rolled her eyes and turned toward the restaurant. As she started for its door, she said,
"Adam Nichols, you have a dirty mind."
"Actually, I rather like how he thinks," Chris said with a laugh, as he and Adam trailed behind her. "So you really didn't spend the morning in bed together? That's rather disappointing," Adam said, as he and Chris followed Danielle inside the restaurant.
"Tell me about it," Chris said dryly.
"So why do you two look like something the cat dragged in?"
"We spent the morning at the police station," Chris explained.
Without asking for an invitation, Adam followed the pair to a booth and sat down with them.
"We don't have to eat with him, do we?" Danielle said, with mock seriousness.
Chris picked up the menus at the end of the table, handing one to Danielle and then one to Adam.
"He's my realtor, Danielle, and I want to hear about my new house."
"What do you mean you spent the morning at the police station?" Adam asked.
Peeking over her menu, Danielle looked at Adam.
"Peter Morris was murdered last night."
"You're kidding me. Who killed him?"
"That's the question of the hour," Chris replied. "And technically, he was murdered early this morning, not last night."
The next moment, the server came to their table, filled their coffee cups, and took their orders. When she left them, Adam asked,
"Where did it happen?" In the parlor at Marlowe House, Danielle told him.
Holy crap, seriously? Not really surprised someone finally killed the hustler, but in Marlowe House?
I always figured it would be in the library with a candlestick, not in the parlor with a fishing knife, Chris quipped.
Danielle couldn't help but laugh.
Are we awful? The man is dead, and it was horribly gruesome.
She shook her head and took a sip of coffee.
That's pretty cold, even for me, Adam said. What happened? I take it neither of you killed him or you'd be in jail right now. Although with Chris's money, you'd probably be out.
He looked at Chris and arched his brows.
You didn't kill him, did you? After all, I'm counting on making a lot of money from you on real estate commissions in the future, and I'd rather not have to do it from your prison cell.
God, no, Chris snorted.
Danielle went on to tell Adam about how they had found the body in the parlor and spent the morning at the police station answering questions.
Any idea who did it?
Adam asked when she finished recounting the morning's events. Chris picked up his coffee cup and looked across the table at Adam.
Officer Morelli seems to think it was me. I suppose if Joe has to pin this murder on someone, you'd be the best candidate, Adam said.
Why me?
Chris asked incredulously. Maybe the blood on your hands when Heather walked in, Danielle suggested. Looking at Chris, Adam nodded toward Danielle.
I was thinking more along the lines of getting rid of the competition.
I'd hate to think Joe would do something like that, Danielle said with a sigh. It's one thing if he sincerely thought Chris did it. Hell, he once believed I'd kill my cousin, but I can't imagine him trying to pin a murder on someone for a personal reason. And anyway, Joe knows there will never be anything between us, and Chris and I are just friends.
Adam glanced over to Chris, noting his unreadable expression.
So what was your motive? Hell, I'd have more of a motive to kill him than you.
Don't say that too loud, Danielle scolded. From what I recall, Jail didn't agree with you.
You have a point. Adam cringed.
What would your motive be? Chris asked.
I suppose you could say I lost a girlfriend to earthbound spirits. Isabella and I broke up after she got hooked up with them, Adam explained.
Danielle was just about to take a sip of water when she paused and looked across the table at Adam. Lifting her brows, she said,
"According to Will Wayne, you might have even more of a reason to kill Morris."
She sipped the water and then set the glass back on the table.
Will Wayne? Isabella's father? Adam asked.
I ran into Will a few weeks back. He told me someone called him up and claimed Morris was responsible for Isabella's death, Danielle explained.
Who called him? Adam asked.
Danielle shook her head.
I've no idea. Neither did he. Some anonymous caller.
It was probably a prank call. A crappy one, Adam said.
That's what I told Danielle when she told me, Chris said.
Danielle shrugged.
Will seems to think it might be possible.
What did the chief say? Something like that would have to involve the coroner, Adam said.
That's pretty much what I told Will, but I haven't said anything to McDonald about it.
Not even this morning when you were being questioned? Adam asked.
Danielle frowned.
Why would I say anything?
I'd imagine they're looking at all possible motives, Adam explained.
Will didn't have anything to do with Morris's death, Danielle insisted.
I'm not saying he did.
Adam set his mug on the table and looked over at Danielle.
I don't believe anyone murdered Isabella. She had an aneurysm, according to the coroner. Anyway, if earthbound spirits had something to do with her death, they wouldn't have been so careless with the body. Kind of hard to cash in on her will without a body.
They didn't know Stoddard was going to hide it.
Danielle grew silent for a moment and then looked up. Maybe you guys are right. It probably was a prank call.
Why do you say that? Chris asked.
Isabella had already changed her will when she died, and I'm sure Earthbound spirits knew the will they had was outdated.
But they did put it into probate, Adam reminded her.
When Will and I discussed a motive for killing Isabella, we agreed that Earthbound spirits probably felt confident claiming Stoddard forged the current will because of what he'd done with Lily. Not to mention Stoddard was dead and not there to defend his claim on Isabella's estate.
I see where you're going, Adam said. At the time Isabella died, Morris had no idea Stoddard would hide the body or end up getting murdered.
If Earthbound Spirits was responsible for Isabella's death, the motive certainly wasn't to get their hands on her estate. If Stoddard had called the police the moment he found Isabella's body, the chances of the courts favoring Earthbound Spirits' claims over Stoddard's would have been a long shot.
So I wonder who the caller was and why pick on poor Will, Chris said. Obviously, it wasn't anyone who knew anything about Earthbound Spirits, Adam said.
Why do you say that? Danielle asked.
Well, you said they accused Morris of killing her. Morris never did the dirty work. It would have been Cleve.
Actually, the woman mentioned Cleve, Danielle said. According to the caller, Cleve refused to kill Isabella, so Morris got someone else to do it. Frowning, Adam looked from Danielle to Chris.
I find that hard to believe.
Why is that? Chris asked.
Cleve would never refuse Morris anything.
According to the caller, he did, Danielle insisted.
Caller, did you say it was a woman? Adam asked.
Yeah. Why? Adam shook his head.
Nothing. Just thinking.
12. After leaving the diner, Chris and Danielle headed for Ian's. It was still too early to get into Marlowe House. When they arrived, Lily was asleep in Ian's bedroom while he worked in the dining room on his newest project. Chris and Danielle lounged on the sofa, watching an old movie, with Sadie napping by their feet. They had been watching the movie for about 30 minutes when Danielle glanced over to Chris, silently studying his profile. He really could be a model, she thought. His sandy-colored hair was slightly longer than it had been when he had first arrived at Marlowe House before Christmas. While it could benefit from a comb, as could hers at this point, she had to admit there was something sexy about the tumbled and casual look. The dark circles below his blue eyes reminded Danielle of their stressful morning.
You've been awful quiet. Are you okay? Danielle asked.
His eyes still on the television, he asked.
Do you think we'll see Morris?
Walt's on before he woke you up, so it's possible. But I really hope he's moved on. They were quiet for a few minutes, watching the old black-and-white movie, when Chris asked,
Danielle, you know back at the diner when you told Adam we were friends?
She smiled. Yeah, we are friends.
Actually, you said just friends.
Well, you know what I mean. Danielle scooted down on the sofa, propping her feet up on the coffee table.
Before all this happened, I was going to ask you today if you wanted to go out with me tomorrow night for Valentine's Day dinner.
With her arms folded over her chest as she remained slumped down on the sofa, her feet on the table, Danielle looked over at Chris.
You always ask women out at the last minute? And Valentine's Day? Sheesh. I always heard Valentine's Day dates were made at least a week in advance.
You're the one who said we were just friends, Chris smiled.
Danielle shrugged. True, but it is Valentine's Day. Maybe I already have a date.
With who? Walt?
Danielle arched her brows and smiled.
Maybe. After all, he did take me to Hawaii last night. Although our trip was cut short due to Morris's untimely demise. Chris looked from the television to Danielle.
I know about the dream hop, or at least I figured it was something like that. Walt said you told him you were cold, but you were asleep.
If it had been a little warmer, it would have felt just like a beach in Hawaii.
It wasn't real, Danielle.
It felt real.
You know what I mean.
There's no harm in a dream hop, Danielle said defensively.
It is if it becomes a substitute for...
Chris let out a sigh and leaned back on the sofa.
Substitute for what? Danielle asked.
He studied her for a moment before answering.
Substitute for a real relationship.
I'm not ready for that kind of relationship anyway, Danielle said in a whisper.
Why? Because of Joe? And how he didn't turn out to be what you thought?
Danielle shook her head. I know now I wasn't ready to get into a relationship when I first went out with Joe. So much was going on back then. I'd lost my husband just 6 months earlier, had just moved to Oregon, was trying to get a new business off the ground, and then everything spun out of control with Cheryl being murdered. Even if all that hadn't happened, I wasn't ready for anything but casual friendship. It was probably for the best that things didn't work out between Joe and me.
Just as long as you don't allow the unique relationship you have with Walt to interfere with your real life.
What Walt and I have is real.
You know what I mean.
I'm just not in a hurry to get into a serious relationship. There is so much I need to do first.
Then agree to go out with me tomorrow. You know I'm anything but serious.
Danielle laughed. You have a point there. Most of the time I think of you as that unemployed guy who prefers to live on some friend's boat and enjoy life rather than a secretive philanthropist.
Not sure if I should be insulted or flattered.
I suppose a little of both. About tomorrow night... Why don't we see how things are going by then? Who knows if the cops will descend on us again or what might come up. And it probably will be difficult to get a table at a restaurant anyway.
Fair enough.
Sadie leapt up, knocking Danielle's feet from the coffee table. The golden retriever started to bark and then ran to the front door. Leaning toward the coffee table, Danielle picked up the remote and turned off the television. It sounds like someone's at the door. They both started to stand up when Ian entered the room with Adam Nichols.
I found this guy on my front porch.
Ian flashed Adam a smile and then returned to the dining room to work, leaving the new arrival with Chris and Danielle.
Are you stalking us?
Danielle teased.
Be nice, Chris scolded.
Sometimes I wonder why my grandmother thinks you're sweet, Adam told Danielle.
What's up, Adam? Chris asked.
Figured you two would still be here. I've got sort of a good news, bad news thing going on. Couldn't really deliver the good news by phone, so I thought I'd bring it in person.
What good news? Danielle asked. Adam held up a set of keys.
Thought I'd bring you the keys to your new house. Technically speaking, you really shouldn't go in until it records, which should be by 4 this afternoon.
He tossed the keychain to Chris.
So what's the bad news? Chris asked.
He and Danielle sat back down on the sofa. Adam took a seat in the recliner.
I just got a call from my grandmother. She was telling me all about the nice young man I just sold the house to, and how his last name is really Glandon, and he's loaded.
How did she find out? Danielle asked.
She already knew I'd sold Chris a house and that it was closing any day now. As for the rest, she heard it on the radio. I guess the story of Peter Morris's murder and how Chris Glandon found the body is out there. I believed they referred to you as the elusive philanthropist who'd been holed up in the quaint bed and breakfast, sight of today's grisly murder. They didn't mention anything about Chris Johnson, but Grandma figured it out. I'm surprised she still referred to me as a nice young man, considering I was found with a dead body, one that had been brutally murdered. Well, Grandmother loathed Morris, and if she thought you were the one who killed him, which I don't believe she does, she would probably want to give you a medal.
Chris looked at the set of keys in his hand, giving them a brief toss. Clutching them, he looked from Danielle to Adam.
I guess this changes everything. I suppose I was being overly optimistic, thinking I could live here as Chris Johnson.
What are you going to do now? Danielle asked.
Considering Chris put the house under one of his companies, I don't think it'll be all that easy for people to just come into town and find where he lives. At least not by looking in the property records. Hell, half of the houses in my property management program are held by some company set up by the owners for tax purposes, Adam said. I'm not really surprised this came out, Chris said with a sigh. If you decide not to stay in Frederickport, I could list it for you or put it in my property management program, Adam suggested. While I'm not thrilled, I have no intention of leaving. I'd hoped I could fly under the wire for a bit longer, but I always knew this was a possibility. And it's not like I've droves of paparazzi chasing me. I can handle the letters and inquiries from people asking for a donation. I just hate when they show up at my door. What if you purchased another property in the area, under your real name, while you live in the house you just purchased? Adam suggested.
Chris could afford that, but wouldn't it be pretty obvious no one was living at the house? Danielle asked.
I was thinking more of a house he could use as his headquarters. He did tell me he was looking for something.
Headquarters? Danielle looked from Adam to Chris.
Since my parents' death, I've been doing most of my charity work through my attorneys. And while I trust them, I know I need to get more hands-on. There's too much money involved, too much temptation and possibility for fraud. I told Chris I'd be more than willing to take over the responsibility for him. I already have an office. Adam grinned.
Oh, my. Danielle closed her eyes briefly and fought the urge to laugh. That thought is rather frightening.
You have no trust in me, Danielle, Adam scoffed.
Do you blame me?
He shrugged. Not really, but I do have an ideal property for Chris, one that will solve all his problems.
And a nice commission for you? Danielle asked. Adam smiled, reminding Danielle a bit of Alice in Wonderland's Cheshire Cat.
Oh, yeah. So, what is this great and undoubtedly expensive property? Chris asked. The Gusaroff Estate, Adam told him.
That monstrosity? Danielle gasped.
That monstrosity, as you call it, is on prime oceanfront real estate and would make an excellent headquarters, with plenty of rooms to use as offices, a state-of-the-art security system, and is the kind of home people would expect someone like Chris Glandon to live in. I prefer a sailboat cabin, Chris reminded him. No, Chris Johnson likes living on a borrowed sailboat, or in a room at a bed and breakfast, but Chris Glandon has more expensive tastes, Adam told him.
You know, he has a point. While I personally wouldn't want to live at the Gusaroff Estate, I could so see it as the Glandon headquarters.
Now we're calling it the Glandon headquarters? Chris asked.
Ignoring Chris, Danielle asked Adam,
Is the property for sale?
Yes, it has been for a while.
Danielle looked at Chris. It does have a good security system.
Isn't that the house you broke into? Chris asked her.
One of them, Adam answered with a laugh. 13. Louis had just woken up when Danielle received the phone call that they could return to Marlowe House. Curious to see the condition of the property after the police search and Morris's murder, Ian followed them across the street. Sadie tagged along.
"Have you talked to Heather or David and Arlene?" Lily asked as they made their way up the walk to Marlowe House's front door.
"I sent Heather a text message. As for David and Arlene, I tried calling them on their cell phones, but they didn't pick up. I have no idea where they went. But I left a message and told them they could come back."
"You think they'll check out early?" Ian asked.
Danielle unlocked the front door.
"I wouldn't be surprised."
Danielle and Chris found Walt anxiously waiting for them in the entry hall. While Lily couldn't see Walt, she knew he was there, especially considering the way Sadie greeted him. As for Ian, he was unaware of Walt's existence, yet once again wondered why his dog always acted so peculiar in Marlowe House.
"I didn't think the police would ever leave," Walt told Danielle, as he followed her and the rest of the group into the parlor. "So this is where it happened," Ian murmured.
He walked to the sofa and looked down at where the throw rug had been. Blood stained the wood floor.
"Oh, my," Lily gasped, her eyes riveted on the red stain. "Just seeing that blood brings it all back."
Ian took Lily's hand in his and squeezed. He looked over at Danielle and Chris, who silently stared at the red stain.
"Do you think it's safe for you all to stay here?"
"I don't believe anyone from Marlowe House is responsible for Morris's death," Danielle said. "From now on, I'm going to make sure the doors stay locked. We know the door was unlocked when Morris was waiting for Chris in the entry. Anyone could have come in."
"How do you know that?" Ian asked. "When I answered the door for Morris around midnight, I don't remember relocking it. I might have, but I don't remember," Chris told him.
"Even if you had locked it then, we know both you and Heather went to bed without checking the front door. You assumed Morris had left. The lights were all turned off. The only thing that makes sense, someone came into the house after Heather left Morris alone in the entry. Either Morris let him in, if Chris locked the door, or whoever the killer was let himself in," Danielle said. Lily shuddered. "I wonder if it was someone out to get Morris or had a grudge against earthbound spirits."
"Either way, not a short list from what I've discovered," Ian said. "I prefer to think Morris was the intended target. I'd hate to consider the possibility that some homicidal maniac is running around knifing people in our neighborhood."
Danielle knelt down by the bloodstain. Reaching out with one hand, she lightly touched the spot. "I wonder if I'll ever be able to get this out of the wood." She stood up. "The police must have taken the rug," Lily noted. "I feel a little guilty worrying about a bloodstain. Considering a man was murdered in this spot just hours ago," Danielle confessed.
"It's hard for me to muster a great deal of sympathy for the man," Ian said, "especially considering everything Kelly told me about him."
"Kelly?" Danielle asked. "Kelly's working with Ian on the Earthbound Spirits expose," Lily said. "She was here yesterday, working with him on the project, but went home last night."
"Your sister was here?" Danielle asked.
"She wanted to come over and say hi, but we had so much work to do, and by the time we wrapped it up, it was awful late."
"What time did she leave?" Chris asked.
"It was after midnight," Ian told him.
I'm surprised the police don't want to interview her. You did tell them she was here, didn't you? That was about the time Morris was murdered, Danielle said. Ian shuffled his feet, glancing down at the bloodstain.
Well, actually,